What's going on, everybody? You are tuned in to the Stone Down Sports Podcast, where we believe that winning is the best high of them all, and that's what we're here to help you with. We are continuing our march to the fantasy baseball season with tonight. We're starting our first base preview. That's right. This is going to be part one of that. We're going to be going over about a dozen players today and another dozen on Thursday to help get you ready for the season. We are also going to hit on some NFL events that took place on Sunday. We aren't necessarily all that happy with, but we're going to save that for later. Before we jump into all that, I do want to say thank you to everybody that comes and hangs out with us, hangs out in the chat, everyone that watches after the fact and live. We really appreciate you. As always, I'm joined by this handsome devil on the screen with me, Kyle. Right. How you doing tonight, buddy?
Doing good. You know, again, Sunday, of course, didn't go our way, and that stung a lot. And then the news came out today that offensive coordinator Ben Johnson's sticking around. So that made me feel a little bit better about Sunday's events. But yeah, I'm doing good. I'm sure you're doing good. Dubo, how are you doing, man? Glad you're in the chat with us.
What's up, Dubo?
You can imagine how we're doing. We're still feeling a little sad. Monday was bad. Yesterday was bad. I didn't talk to anybody, but man, I don't think yesterday it was a pretty general malaise kind of day. And but yeah, we'll get into more of that later. First baseman. I guess there's kind of like four waves when it comes to drafting first baseman. You have your elites, you know, you have your Matt Olson, you have your Freddie Freeman. And then you got those established stars who aren't quite, you know, ceiling MVP, but still perform well enough to make all-stars and things. So you think Pete Alonso, Paul Goldschmidt, people like that. And then, the next couple of tiers, the decisions get a little tougher. It takes a little bit more nuance. You'll think like Torkelson, Steer, Josh Naylor. It could be some players that might outplay their draft slots. And then you have the non-flashy vets like Christian Walker, Yandy Diaz, Rizzo, if he's healthy. Picks that aren't sexy, but can still end up counting stats to play every day in your lineup. So I know Matt's going to get started with.
Yes, we are going to dive in. Number one in our rankings and number one in our hearts is Freddie Freeman. And I do just want to throw this out there. When we talk about points scored last year, that's according to CBS standard scoring. And there are some players with multi-position eligibility, meaning you can play them at first base or third base or in the outfield or whatever that may be. Anyone that we cover today that has that multi-position eligibility, we will not be covering them at any other position. So if you are looking for our take on any given player, just kind of keep that in mind, especially if you're watching after the fact. If you are watching after the fact, don't forget to drop that like and subscribe.
That's right.
Now we're going to jump into the meat and potatoes. Freddie Freeman, first baseman of the Dodgers. I think, Kyle, you've got a little visual aid there for us. You can pop on the screen.
Boom. Well, actually, let's start here.
All right.
With the actual rankings there. Sorry, that should have been the first thing to do there. So we just have 1 through 24 on there. It's already on the website. We'll be putting those up as each week as we go through the various positions in baseball. You see we got Freddie Freeman at the top, Matt Olson, Bryce Harper. Those are your elites. And then some guys down at the bottom, Rhys Hoskins, Santander, and the like that have multi-position eligibility. But again, on the website, go for it, Matt.
Absolutely. So last season, Freddie Freeman. He was the number one overall first baseman, 673 points, averaged 4.2 points per game. There were only two first basemen that scored over 600 points, and there were only four that scored over 500. So you can see just how elite he was. He had 29 home runs, 102 RBIs, scored 131 runs. He had 59 doubles, which was most amongst first basemen. He had 23 stolen bases, also first amongst first basemen. at a triple slash, a 331, 418, 567, an OPS, just a hair under 1,000, which is fantastic. This is something that's really interesting to me. You'll always, you'll hear people talk about same side pitching. And what that means is if you're a left-handed batter, you're facing a left-handed pitcher, right-handed batter, right-handed pitcher. Generally, people do not do as well against same side pitching. Freddie Freeman actually had a higher batting average and a higher BABIP versus lefties than he did righties. He was also, and this one I think was the biggest thing that stood out to me. When he was behind in the count, meaning 0-1, 0-2, 1-2, you know, whatever it may be, he was essentially what a league average player is. He hit 255 with a 277 on base and a 408 slugging percentage. That worked out to a 757 OPS, which, like I said, is roughly league average, which is just fantastic. He's a guy who's always on the field. He's played 158 or more games in 6 of the last 7 seasons. He's not really an elite power hitter. He's more of a mid-20s than a mid-30s home run guy. And you know, generally that's a red flag, especially for first base and really any corner infield spot. He's only hit 30 home runs 3 times, but he more than makes up to it with his bat skills. He's a 300-plus hitter 6 of the last 7 seasons. He's got 98 or more RBIs in 4 of the last 5. So you're definitely getting those counting stats. He's going to be hitting at the heart of the league's best lineup there with the Dodgers. There's no doubt about that. And he's somebody who, just given how hard he hits the ball and his line drive percentage, he's in the top 1% of all batters in the league in expected batting average and expected slugging. His exit velo has been going down the past 4 years. He's got a mid-20s max home run total upside going forward, but he's still a damn good hitter. He's got an 8 ADP right now, and that's according to NFBC leagues. He's a number 1 first baseman off the board, and I can't really envision taking anybody but him at that spot.
No. I mean, he actually finds himself in a more friendly or fantasy-friendly environment than he did last season with the addition of Ohtani. It'll be interesting what they do with that lineup versus right-handed or left-handed pitching. You know, he's been batting second most of his last few years in the lineup, and that's probably going to change. He'll definitely go to 3. I think, Will Smith at 4, Muncy at 5, probably against left-handers. Muncy slides down to 6 because Teoscar Hernandez just smashes lefties. So, he's. Even if last year was like the peak of his career, an A-minus Freddie Freeman season this year would still be MVP conversation. So
yeah, absolutely.
I have him on my fantasy team. He's a damn monster. I love him. He is. Next up, we got Bryce Harper from the Philadelphia Phillies. On the NFBC website, his average ADP is 17, and auction value is $33. Returned last season from that Tommy John early, and he only played 126 game, but still remained an elite hitter in the majors. The guy draws walks at an elite rate, and he can get on base, and that's something you need for fantasy as well. Just get on base. His base on balls percentage was 14.7. That was tied for 3rd in the league with JP Crawford and Max Muncy. So that just solidifies his role as the engine for the Phillies. He's now primarily a first baseman DH, which should work great for fantasy leagues. You should anticipate a 30-90-90 season from him. That's 30 home runs, 90 RBIs and 90 runs scored. And with double digit steals, he had 11 last year, didn't play the whole season. I look for him to get double digit season or double digit steals as well this season. After Freddie Freeman, I think it's going to be either Matt Olson or Bryce Harper. They're always going to be either 2 and 3. Either one's a fine player to have on your roster. A full season of Harper is never a bad thing to have on your roster. I love him this year.
Yeah, absolutely. And so do I. And he's somebody coming off that injury last year, had a monster second half. He had 18 home runs after the break, including 10 in August. And I really like where he's hitting in the lineup. He's going to be third right between Trey Turner and in front of Nick Castellanos. So he's going to get that protection in the lineup, and he's going to have plenty of opportunities to drive in runs as well. He's somebody else who does very, very well against same side pitching. And anytime you can give me any player, regardless of position, who gets on base at a 40% clip, I'm going to take that all day long and twice on Sundays.
And that's even with like his less favorable metrics in chase rate and whiff rate. He makes up for that. He's a seasoned hitter, and that walk rate, great player.
All right. Next up, we are headed north of the border. This one's for you, Blue, if you're watching. We're talking about Vladimir Guerrero Jr., first baseman from the Blue Jays. He's got an ADP of 31, an auction value of 28. He's a number five first baseman coming off the board. Last year, he had 475 points, averaged 3 per game, 26 home runs, 94 driven in, 30 doubles, 78 runs, had a triple slash of 264, 345, and 444, good for a 788 OPS. His power numbers have gone down since his career high of 48 home runs in 2021. And the question everybody is asking is, when is the power going to come back? Is the power going to come back? The big thing that nobody talks about, though, is the renovations they had at Rogers Center in between 2022 and 2023. It went from the sixth best hitter's park to the fifth best pitcher's park, all because of those renovations. According to Fangraphs, the home run rating there went from 117 down to 95. They're a team that, and I have a note here, they need to sign a bat because he doesn't really have much protection in the lineup. And sure as shit, today they went out and signed Justin Turner. He's going to help out a lot because there really isn't much in that lineup that's dependable after him. Yeah. He's somebody who I think if I can get him for the right price, I'm going to be happy with it, but I'm not going to go into the season expecting 40 home runs. I think if he can get back up into the mid-30s, he'll return nice value for where he's going.
Yeah, I think mid-30s, close to 100 in runs and RBIs. He played 156 games, some good things, raised his walk rate, lowered his strikeout rate, but he is just so aggressive on the early count swings that I think he's not waiting for his pitch a lot of times. And I also kind of, I think it's fair to question his work ethic and dedication sometimes. I'll be watching definitely in spring training, see what kind of shape he's on before I'm investing an early draft pick on him. I'm certainly not paying $28 for him as of now. That's a little too high for me. Same. I'll go 18, 19, something like that, but I don't think I'm going 28. But and that was just the average there on NFBC. But fine player. I know you had him last year on our team. For a half a second, but yeah,
and happily flipped him for Matt Olson.
You did. That was a nice move. Okay, next up we have Christian Walker from the Diamondbacks, ADP of 86, auction value is an average of 16. Gold Glover the last couple season finished, he's 32, so just in the prime there, but finished the regular season with a slash line of 258, 333, and 497. OPS career high of 830, 33 home runs, 36 doubles, career high 103 ribbies. Also stole a career high 11 bases with 100% success rate. Steals count for points too. The changes they made in the major leagues, definitely you've seen some people that, you know, might score or might steal a couple bases, steal double digits. He's entrenched himself as the cleanup hitter there in Arizona. He's 21st. Let's see. He's got a precious strikeout percentage. It's 19-2, 21st in the league with players among 650 playoff or plate appearances, and fourth among all first basemen with 650 plate appearances behind Vlad, Freddie Freeman, and Ty France. So that was a little surprise for me. So I think he's got a pretty good value at his ADP now. As long as his plate discipline remains strong, and he remains healthy, he's one of the cheapest top first basemen I think you could go going in the fifth or sixth round in most drafts. Don't be afraid to wait. I think the return, the ROI, you know, will be worth it.
Yeah, and he's somebody who he's a very under the radar, underappreciated guy, yes, especially yes. in fantasy. You talked about it earlier. He's a 30 home run bat. He's done it in back-to-back seasons. What I really like is he's lowered his strikeout percentage by about 4% since 2021 while raising his fly ball percentage by about 4%. And that's something where you don't expect to see that combination when you have somebody who I don't want to necessarily say he's selling out for power, but that's kind of his game. Usually as you see the home run totals go up and you get them out there swinging harder, you see the strikeout totals going up, and that's not really what you're seeing. Dude's a hell of a hitter. He is on the back end of his prime. He's not somebody I'm looking to in dynasty, but in redraft, absolutely.
Absolutely. Sure.
All right. What do we got next on the docket? That's right. We are going to our hometown boys, Spencer Torkelson of the Detroit Tigers. Right now, he's got an ADP of 118, the number 11 first baseman off the board, average auction value of about $14, which I think is about right.
About right.
Last season, some people were high on him coming into the year. Based off his rookie year, there wasn't really a lot to be hopeful about. There were times he looked lost at the plate. He was barely over the Mendoza line. But in the second half of last season, he really, really turned things around. Ended up going over 30 home runs. He had 31, 94 driven in, 34 doubles, scored 88 runs, had a 233, 313, 446 triple slash, good for a 758 OPS, scored 448 fantasy points, good for 2.8 a game. One thing that was encouraging, though, the 213 ISO, his exit velo was up almost a mile and a half. His hard hit was up by 11%. His fly ball rate was up by 6%. There is a mitigating factor in Detroit's park. That outfield is massive, and you've really got to put a charge into the ball to get it out. But he's also a better hitter than his average shows. Coming into the league, he was somebody with a 60-grade hit tool. I don't see him winning any batting titles, but there's no reason he can't get his average up to around 280 once he gets a little bit more time and gets more used to major league pitching. One thing I really liked, he was top five in all of Major League Baseball in year-over-year increase in hits, doubles, home runs, and barrels. And in barrels, he was first. What's a barrel, you ask? It's a well-struck ball where the exit velocity and launch angle generally leads to an expected 500 batting average or a 1500 slugging percentage. It starts at 98 miles an hour off the bat with a launch angle of 26 to 30 degrees. And for every mile an hour increase of exit velocity, you get a wider range of angles that'll count as a barrel. He's surrounded by lefties in the lineup. He's probably going to be hitting third. It's not a team that's going to score a whole hell of a lot of runs, but I really don't see any problem expecting a repeat of last year's numbers with some gains in batting average as well.
Yeah, he should definitely be in line for another 30-90 season. As long as he continues to improve his patience at the plate and reduce his strikeouts, he may end up being a steal at the 10th round ADP. We'll see. Could be a top 12 first baseman. Don't be surprised if you see closer to 35 home runs and 100 RBIs than 30-90. So we'll see.
I'll take that.
I will as well. And then the second of our Spencers, Spencer Steer from the Cincinnati Reds, currently being drafted at 104, auction value 13. This guy can play everywhere. First, second, third, left field. Delivered 271, 356, 464 slash line last season with 23 homers, 15 stolen bases among 665 plate appearances. Doesn't have eye-popping tools. Kind of relies on volume for his production. 43 of his batted balls in the air and he plays in the best ballpark in the league for home runs, right? So we can expect him to accumulate 20 to 25 again as the everyday left fielder. He's got a good eye, keeps his strikeouts in checks. His chase rate's 27.7, and a 20.9 strikeout percentage. That's pretty good. He's a promising pick, I think. He's just going to be 250 average with some power, some speed. I think it's a good value at his ADP, even if it isn't the prettiest pick. I think he offers value in, you know, round nine and beyond.
I think so too. And to me, he's a high variance pick because a lot of his counting stats are going to come down to the development of the young players around him in the lineup. Yeah. He is going to be hitting third. His home ballpark is a bandbox, but you know, you're going to want to see how Ellie De La Cruz and Matt McClain and Edwin Encarnacion Strand, how do these guys develop? How do they learn to handle major league pitching? Are people going to get on base in front of him so he has the RBI opportunities? And I think most important of all is going to be what kind of protection is newly signed Jamer Candelario going to provide for him?
Yeah.
If Jamer can repeat what he did last year, I think, you know, he'll see some more pitches to hit and some more opportunities to drive in runs. If Candelario disappoints, then there's really not a whole hell of a lot of reason to pitch to steer.
Agreed. All right, let's break up a little baseball talk with some conference championship discussion. Chiefs Ravens, you want to start there? I think that was definitely a game that happened Sunday. I'm not sure about the other one.
Yeah, I guess I don't understand how the Chiefs could score no points in the second half and still win. I don't understand. It seemed like most of the time I was sitting there watching Lamar Jackson sit in the pocket for 3 or 4 seconds with nobody to throw to, and I just kept thinking, run. That's what you're good at.
Yeah,
do it. Put the team on your back. This is an opportunity to get to the Super Bowl. And I think it was almost like he had it in his mind that he was more focused on proving everybody wrong, that he could be a pocket passer, as opposed to doing what he needs to do and going out there and being Lamar Jackson and winning the damn game.
I think so. I think you got to credit Steve Spagnuolo as well, the DC for the Chiefs. Really bottled him up. They got to him quick. He didn't have a lot of time to throw. And yeah, I don't understand. You have Lamar just run these RPOs like, you know, often. But hats off to the Chiefs. They're looking good. That crazy pass that Mahomes threw, and he's scrambling back and forth between, you know, in the pocket, and finds Kelsey, who ran the wrong route, and just flings it up there, and Kelsey lunges for it and catches it. These guys are just on the same page all the time. They're a great combo.
Yeah, they are. I keep going back to Lamar thing. Dude had 8 rush attempts. Like, why?
Yeah.
You know, you look at that rush defense. They only ran the ball 16 times as a team. Why in the hell are you trying to beat the Chiefs through the air? It doesn't make any damn sense.
It doesn't, but that's what they did. I don't know. Maybe,
exactly.
Maybe Greg Roman doesn't deserve all the hate.
Oh, I'm sure he does, but both things can be true.
What do we got in the chat here? Chiefs LBs were fire. They certainly were. They were good. Yep. Whole defense was good. Snead was good. Wasn't he the one that knocked the ball out at the goal line? Flowers? Was it, yep, Snead? I think it
sure was.
He played well. You know, I'm watching that play and I'm like, oh, there's a touchdown. And then you're just like, the ball came out, and you're like, how did that not cross the plane? Surely it did. And the camera work, the replay was great on TV the other day. I'm like, it came out right before. Fantastic job.
That was quite the series for Zay Flowers. Catches that pass and then just decides to drop it at the ground and stand over the cornerback. Like, dude, you are a rookie.
Yeah.
If you want to talk all that shit, get some time in the league.
Right.
Make a name for yourself. Until then, shut the hell up and get your ass back to the huddle.
The Lions.
Dude.
The Lions.
Dude.
Yeah, it's tough. 17-point lead. Had an opportunity to kick a 46-yard field goal. The analytics were or toss up on that essentially. I mean, I actually said go for it. I think 0.2% or something, but then that Reynolds dropped that pass, and then the floodgates pretty much fucking opened. I think it was just what, 3 or 4 minutes after that drop pass, it was tied 24 all. So,
yeah, and that was, you know, you always hear the phrase, it was a game of, it's a game of inches, and that's really what it come down to. It was almost a game of ifs, right?
Yeah,
a ton. If Gibbs doesn't fumble, the Lions probably win. You know, yeah. If Brandon Ayuk doesn't catch that crazy pass off dude's face mask, the Lions probably win. If Josh Reynolds hauls in that pass, the Lions probably win.
Yeah.
But that, those three events were just too much to overcome when you're talking about a game with razor thin margins. And yep. Detroit has struggled in the third quarter all season. And you know, that's something that MCDC and the returning Ben Johnson, that's something they're going to have to work on, is their halftime adjustments. And look, you don't go into halftime and just completely blow up your game plan in the 10, 15 minutes that you're in there and come back out and do everything completely different. But at the same time, look, MCDC as a head coach, he's pretty inexperienced. That stuff takes time. It comes with experience. When you look at it objectively and you step back and you take off your Lions fandom hat, it was a hell of a season. It was a successful season. They won the division for the first time in too damn long. They won two playoff games. They made it to the NFC Championship game. If you would have told me before the season that the Lions were going to win their division, they were going to win 12 games, and they were going to play in the NFC Championship game on the road and keep it within 3 points, who's not going to take that?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, that Reynolds drop should have been a completion. Goff was being pressured. Goff was 0 for 8 when being pressured in that game. I thought it was still a good play call. That's something they make all that throw all the time. That play before that third and four handoff to ARSB, I liked that call less than the fourth down call, honestly.
That almost seemed like, and I forget where I saw this, but I think it was perfect, like a basketball analogy. That was a Ben Johnson heat check right there.
Yeah.
That play Maybe. Call.
Don't know.
You know, it is what it is. At the end of the day, a good decision leads to a bad result. It's still a good decision, you know, and yeah. It is what it is. You learn from the experience and you come into next year fired up with, you know, hopefully more superb draft picks courtesy of Brad Holmes. They know what they need to address. They need some help on the defensive line. They need somebody else who can get pressure on the quarterback, and they need help in the secondary.
And
a little bit of offensive line depth. Yeah. But they've got the most cap room in the league.
I don't know if Jonah Jackson will be back or Glasgow will be back. They're both probably going to be not expensive options. Jonah Jackson just hurt every other week. I might look on going to another guard. Or maybe that Olasika steps up and has a great offseason as well and is playing great next season. So,
and maybe they spend a high draft pick on offensive line help. You never know. There's a lot of ways that they can go. I'm going to trust in Holmes and I'm going to trust in MCDC to do what's right for the team. And look, people that want to complain about, you know, all the going for it on fourth down and you didn't kick the field goal and this, that, and the other, like that's the MCDC experience. You're either on board or you're not, but expecting them to get to that point and then abandon the philosophies that got them there in the first place is ridiculous.
Yeah, it is. And we don't have a good kicker. Okay. We had Riley Patterson all season, and then they went with Badgley the last few weeks, month, whatever it was. You know, he's a backup practice squad, you know, kicker.
Right. Money Badger, my ass.
He's 80. He's what? 82% of his field goal attempts he's hit, and 77% between 40 and 49, and both field goals would have been, I think one was 46 and one was 48, but
which is below average.
Yeah, Kaime Fairbairn there in Houston is a free agent. Yeah, I say go get him. We need to complete this team, and a kicker would be nice. We sucked and sucked and sucked forever, but we had Jason Hansen, Matt Prater, Eddie Murray, great fucking kickers. Great kickers. Mm-hmm. Amazing kickers. And now it's like, we're good on all these other areas. Now we suck in kicker and we got to go for it on fourth down all the time. I really think there are situations where you do need to kick a field goal. And if you have the field goal kicker on your roster, then you kick it sometimes. But not hating MCDC. Still love him. He's still my coach. There's plenty of teams out there that would love to have him as their coach. Ain't going nowhere. So
no. And that almost reminds me, if you think of the Tigers when they had that run of success there in the, you know, in the 2000s, in the aughts, and in the teens, they had everything but the bullpen.
Oh, of course.
And now they have the bullpen and nothing else. But, you know,
I did some defense.
They got some.
All right. What do we got here?
It's time to jump back into some baseball. Holy shit. Got a whole damn book here in the chat.
I think they're all just talking. Glad you guys could all jump in. Dubo, Sway.
What's up, fellas?
Supersonic. And then, oh, who gets the blame? Yeah, I don't. Nobody.
Yeah, there's... because you can't really point to any one thing and say, this is why they lost.
Yeah.
You know, if Goff would have went out there and thrown three interceptions, point to him. You know, yeah. Even the Gibbs fumble, it was... dude, that's run the wrong way. And what a lot of people don't understand is on a handoff, the quarterback doesn't give the ball to the running back. The quarterback's job is to get the ball out there, and the running back takes the ball and clamps down on that shit.
Yeah.
And unfortunately, you know, just the exchange was shit and you saw the result. And especially when it's deep in your own territory against a team like that, that's asking a lot of the defense, even to just try and hold them to a field goal.
It is. Short
and
field.
Detroit's defense is not there yet.
Yeah, nope, they're not. All right, your turn.
All right, so we're going to head down to Tampa Bay and talk about Yandy Diaz. Who in the hell is that, you ask? Well, we're going to tell you. Right now, he's a number 12 first baseman off the board, ADP 127, 128, auction value of about $12. Last year, he was the number 7. Overall first baseman. So we're a little bit down on him this year compared to where he finished last year. Put up 473 points, good for 3.5 points per game, which was fourth amongst qualified first basemen. At 22 home runs, 78 ribbies, scored 95 runs, 35 doubles, had a triple slash, a 330, 410, 522, good for a 932 OPS. He was actually your AL batting champion last year. This dude hits the ball incredibly hard. He beats that ball like it owes him money. He has a 98th percentile average exit velocity, 97th percentile hard hit rate, which was 54.3%, up 5% year over year. His strikeout percentage was up 5%. Walk percentage was down 3.2%. He's somebody who his RBI opportunities are going to be limited because he does lead off there. And Tampa Bay is not shy about playing the analytics game and sitting him against some same side hitting. He does have back-to-back seasons over a 400 on base percentage. His slugging percentage was up 100 points year over year. I'm not really expecting 20 home runs again. I am expecting around a 300 average, 60 to 70 good RBI, and a very solid 380 to 400 on base percentage.
Well, that's the good news about Yandy Diaz. The bad news is he no longer has third base eligibility like he did in most leagues. So I kind of left him around the middle round first baseman. He only started 3 games at third base last season. So a lot of managers, I think, were able to plug him in at third and, you know, double up some stuff to, you know, make their roster a little bit better. I don't know. Yeah, I think he's 12th round or later. I don't let him be your first baseman. I don't recommend that. I don't think he's going to save fantasy managers 2 years in a row. But like you mentioned, he does hit well for average. He's going to get some runs scored, going to get some RBIs, and he just doesn't have any, you know, elite power either. Don't let him be your first baseman.
Well, and I think he's somebody who who probably is going to be better in roto leagues because of the on base and high average than he is in points leagues, just because you're not getting the big power output, you're not getting the RBIs, nothing like that.
Now we got, I love this guy's name, Vinny Pasquantino at the Kansas City Royals, ADP of 165, going for about $8, average auction value. Season was cut short last season. He only played 61 games, tore his labrum. But the first 38 games of the season, he was slashing .298, .383, and .539, looking every bit of the OPS hog that we think he is, or he was hyped to be, I should say. But then he kind of hung around and played hurt there for another, 25, 30 games, and it kind of dragged his numbers down. He finished with a .247, .324, .437. Maintained a low strikeout rate, above average based on balls as well. He's got great bat-to-ball skills. I think he can kind of rebound there, generating some sneaky power. His quality of contact, I think, is only done by his quantity of contact. His 11.9% strikeout rate was 12th among hitters with 250 plate appearances, ranking right between Acuna and Bregman. He's fully healthy going into this season. If he can get closer to 600 plate appearances while batting cleanup, I'm guessing there, those numbers can end up a bit more stout. I like him this year.
Yeah, he's somebody who you can get on the cheap. He's a good bounce back candidate. He is someone who gets fooled quite a bit on changeups. He's only got a 200 batting average against that pitch and a 23.5% whiff rate. He doesn't hit the ball particularly hard either. His EV and max EV are both down year over year, but understand this is a dude who's only played about 130 total games at the major league level. So we don't even really fully understand what he is and what he's going to be. I think there is limited upside for him just because of Kauffman Stadium. That is, it's a park that's great for scoring because it has a massive outfield, but power does get suppressed there. But he's somebody that has a good frame that should lend itself to some gains in power just as he kind of fills out and matures as a hitter. He's somebody that, given where he's going, I think he's the number 17 first baseman off the board right now, and his ADP at 165. There it's... you're talking 14th round, 15th round, 16th round, something like that. And anything you get there, any kind of gains you can get from him at that ADP, that shit's all money in the bank.
Hell yeah, it is.
So we got next on the board. And this cat here, or one I can't stand, Cleveland or Ohio for that point. Josh Naylor, Cleveland Guardians. He's got an ADP of 132, AAV, average auction value of $10. He is the number 14 first baseman off the board. He was the number 20 first baseman last season. Scored 391 points, good for 3.2 a game, 17 home runs, drove in 97, scored 52 runs, 32 doubles, stole 10 bases, which is surprising for somebody who's shaped like a human bowling ball at 5'11", 250. Had a triple slash, a .308, .354, .489, good for an .842 OPS. His batted ball data, and what I mean by that is his exit velocity, his hard hit percentage, line drive, ground ball, and fly ball rates, they're all roughly league average. However, he does have a fantastic strikeout percentage at 13.7%, which is 10% below league average. He's going to be batting cleanup there in Cleveland, protecting Jose Ramirez. He's not going to get much protection himself, so that's something to keep in mind. He does chase some pitches out of the zone, but he excels at making contact on those pitches. Now, he's not the bad ball hitter that Vlad Guerrero was in his day or anything like that.
Right.
But his contact and plate skills are there. He had a 52 point increase in his batting average year over year, which was sixth best in the major league. He's going to need to work on his launch angle and generate more fly balls to see much gains in power. But the RBI opportunity still should be there for him.
definitely should, because he should continue to bat behind Jose Ramirez. So I think that should be a boon to his RBIs. I think he offers enough. Yeah, there's enough upside to nab as a second or third corner infielder in the middle rounds. I think he's a player putting the pieces together. You mentioned his launch angle as it stands now. Yeah, he hits too many ground balls with little speed that could kind of bottom out his game. The shift ending didn't hurt him. There's some optimism with him, but there's a reason that he's not ranked higher. Plus, I don't see him against lefties. So likely won't see lefties. We'll see. And not a lot of excitement in Cleveland.
No, not really. They're in a rebuild, and you know what? Good. I hope they suck for the next 20 years.
Right. The Guardians. Okay. Next up, Nathaniel Lowe with the Texas Rangers. Won a World Series title. ADP at 200. Going for $5. He might be my biggest underrated player in the major leagues right now. I think he's an effective contributor for the Rangers the past three seasons, but he is far from a household name. Slash 262, 360, and 414 with 17 homers, 82 ribbies, walked 93 times in 724 plate appearances. His walk rates are among some of the best in baseball. Get on base. Top 10 percentile in walk percentage and chase percentage. He's eighth among hitters with 600 plate appearances with a 12.8 base on balls percentage. You're also hitting in the heart of this amazing, potent Rangers lineup. And when pitchers have to attack or go pitch around, you know, Seager or Adelis Garcia, I think Lowe has, he's going to benefit from that. He's also one of the better defensive first basemen in the league as well. I think he's expected to remain the everyday first baseman there. He may not be too exciting, but steady and solid production. It's definitely enough for him to finish in the top 80 hitters as he did last season.
Oh, for sure. He's probably going to hit sixth in that Rangers lineup, but you know, you hit the nail on the head. That's probably the best lineup that the AL is going to have to offer. So the opportunity for both runs, because he's going to be hitting in front of Jonah Heim, who's one of the best hitting catchers in baseball, are going to be there. He'll get a little bit of protection in the lineup, and everybody in front of him is going to be getting on base. I absolutely love that his walks essentially doubled year over year.
Yeah,
I love that plate discipline. Don't get yourself out. Wait for your pitch and then drive that son of a bitch.
Yeah. He is somebody I would be very happy with if I, you know, missed out on some of the top dogs.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, and you got to understand when you're talking about these, you know, first baseman, 17, 18, 19, 20, whatever it is. These are not everyday starters at first base for you. Maybe you plug them into your util slot. Maybe you plug them in if you've got a corner infield slot, something like that. But these aren't necessarily players you're going to count on day after day after day. If you're in daily moves right. leagues, yeah, maybe you're mixing and matching based on the matchup. In weekly moves leagues, you know, there's a good chance you may have a better option out there that you can plug in for the week, but make sure you're paying attention. We're going to be here with you every single week to help you make those decisions, and we'll make them together.
Absolutely.
So now Beer Maker's got them a new first baseman, Rhys Hoskins. Yeah, right now he's a number 20 first baseman off the board. He's going around 205 overall. You can get him for $6. Look, he's a dude coming off an injury. He missed all of last season. He's a dude who he's got league average plate discipline, slightly below average chase rate, which is nice. When he's healthy, he's a great source of power. He's got 30 home run upside, especially in that ballpark, whatever the hell they call it now. To me, it's still Miller Field.
Yeah, sure. Can't remember.
The ball flies there. I believe when they have the roof open, more so than when it's closed. He should hit cleanup. He's got some decent hitters around him. He should have nice RBI opportunity. I think a conservative estimate, at least for the home runs, maybe 25 home runs. He'll give you 85 to 90 RBIs. He strikes out a lot. In his last full season, he struck out something like 165 times, which for those of you who are mathematically challenged just like me, and I had to do the long form math for this, that's more than once a game.
Yeah.
That's a damn lot. He will draw a walk, though. His last full season, 30 home runs, 79 stakes, 81 runs, 33 doubles, triple slash of 246, 332, 462, good for a 794 OPS. So if he comes back and he's fully healthy and he returns to the form that he's had in years past, he's going to be a steal where he's going right now.
He could be. When he was a rookie in 2017, he only played 50 games, smashed 18 homers. If that's 162 game season, he's on pace for 58 home runs that year. So yeah, if he can just stay healthy and appear in more games than, you know, 115 or so, I'm just throwing out a number. I think there's a path to that. The Brewers don't really have a full-time DH. I think Hoskins, if he doesn't play at first, will also get some DH looks too. Kristen Yelich probably will too. Willem Contreras probably will too. That they might split some of those DH duties. He'll get his days off. Plus, they want to take it easy to keep his knee healthy as well. That's likely the floor. I think he certainly can exceed expectations and finish closer to the top 10 first baseman than the top 20. But we'll see. All right. Next up, we have another multi-position eligibility. It's Anthony Santander. Played 98 games last year in right field, but 12 games at first base. So he is most likely going to be eligible in your league at first base as well. He's going 136 average auction value. Whatever it was, I just missed it. 11. Doesn't have tremendous raw power. He only had 94 and a half exit velocity last season. Did slash for 257, 325, and 472. 28 homers, only five steals across 656 plate appearances. Camden Yards is now a pitcher park, so it kind of punishes guys like him with middling, you know, raw pop, I should say. However, his walk rate at 8.4 and his 23.2% strikeout percentage kind of mask his 37.7% chase rate. Pitchers are going to try and exploit that this season, so I'm a little lower on him. I don't expect a repeat out of his current ADP of 144 or whatever it was, 130, 144, I can't remember. I think he'll probably approach 25 home runs again. I just don't know if that alone will be the price or is worth the price.
Yeah,
he's pretty subpar on defense too.
He is. He's not a superstar by any stretch. He is a very solid player. And in baseball, more so than football, the lineup around you matters. And I like this lineup. The Orioles, you know, even though they were a playoff team last year, they're still a young and up and coming team. They've got a lot of young talent, both there on the big league roster and ready to come up from the minors. He's somebody who hits the ball a little bit harder than average, not a whole hell of a lot, but he'll provide decent ish power in terms of home runs. But I think more so too, in terms of extra base hits. You know, if he gives me 25 home runs and 45 doubles, I'm a happy camper. You know, the average isn't going to kill you. I think a big opportunity for him too is going to be scoring runs, just especially as the season goes onward. There in the early season in Baltimore, you're not going to have those warm temperatures. You're going to have some chilly, windy days there, and all of that suppresses offense. He's somebody that I would preach patience with. And Kyle, you had him on a team last year, and you saw, hey, you know, he's somebody who gets off to a slow start, but as the year goes on, as the weather warms up, he's somebody who will come on in the, you know, May, June, July, and as we get into the dog days.
Yeah, I think that's true with a lot of major leaguers, except for, you know, Acuna or Betts or something. But his defense that I touched on a moment ago, I think that could lead to a tighter leash this season with the way that the Orioles continue to promote prospects to the majors. They're just doing so well with that, but we'll see. We'll see.
Yeah, I mean, it's possible, but it's also difficult to sit a 25 home run bat.
It sure is. That's true.
You know, so, I mean, maybe he'll spend a little bit more time at first base this year.
Right.
You know, I want to keep him in the lineup. If I'm whatever their dickhead manager is, you know, I want him in the lineup 5-6 days a week.
Well, and you're probably going to need him with that division you're playing in too. The AL East is pretty tough.
And it's a long ass season, man.
It certainly is. Okay.
Damn, so we've gotten through our first half, part one here. Like we said, we've got our rankings. We've got 24 dudes, and we are going to preview all 24 dudes. The fantasy baseball season is still about 2 months away, and we've got a lot of work to do between now and then, and we're going to help all of you out with that. We're going to do the research. We're going to give you the information, and we're going to help you draft a winning team that's built for the long haul. We are going to preview every single position week by week. Some positions is going to be the top 24. Other positions like outfield, there's a lot of leagues out there that start 5 outfielders. Guess what? We're not going through 60. We're here to help. Yeah. We're not here to do it for you. You know, but
didn't you just say we're going to help you and do it for? No, that's just we have full-time jobs and stuff too, so we have to sleep. You know, we must get some sleep. But Thursday we'll do another 12, and I believe we're going to give out our. What are we doing?
Our fantasy football postseason awards. So
yes, got,
you know, MVP, offensive rookie of the year, defensive rookie of the year, best waiver wire pickup.
That's a good one.
And biggest bust. And yeah. I'm not talking Dolly Parton bust either. I'm talking dudes you were counting on that just shit the bed.
I noticed she chose the 70-year-old woman to talk about her breasts. That's interesting.
Older the berry, the sweeter the juice.
Okay. I mean, she's got a lot of money. She likes giving it away.
Nice. I'll hold my hand out for some.
I'll go lay on her pillow. Yeah.
Pillow right. Or pillows?
I don't know. Whatever. How much? She's probably like one of the people that got like 40 pillows on her bed. Yeah, I take like 30 pillows off to even get in the bed. I don't know.
I got all pillows ain't stopping you. So
plus she's got her own amusement park. I can go on rides and it'd be great. Not awesome. A roller coaster guy. I was when I was younger. I don't know.
Look at that. 52 minutes. We may even wrap up a little bit early tonight. Wife made tacos. That's calling my name.
You eat tacos like every 6 days. I swear to
God. They're delicious.
Yeah.
They are absolutely delicious.
I like tacos too. But I don't have anything else if you want to take her out.
Yeah, I guess we can do that. Those of you who tune in for fantasy football content, again, we're not gonna leave you dynasty players behind. As we get towards free agency here and the combine and the NFL draft, we're going to be popping back in and talking about all that relevant information. But I think that's going to do it for today. So we appreciate everyone stopping by. Thank you all for your support and just everything else. It's fantastic. And Kyle and I really enjoy doing this, and I'm going to get a little long-winded now and ramble, and that's not good. I was going to say radio, but this shit ain't radio. Anyway, that shit ain't good content. Appreciate everyone. Take it easy. Stay safe. And we will see you Thursday night at 7.
Have a good night, folks.